Welcome to Studio 1776. I'm your host, Daniel Leach. I'm here with Rexton Lotus Justice, and we are going to be doing a questions and answers, general discussion about what's really happening in the world and what's really happening in her world at the moment. So, Rexton, how are you doing today?
Oh, you know, proud of being here.
Right.
Tired of having my freedom unlawfully taken for 19 months now.
Right. Exactly. So here's a question for you, and I know the general audience is going to want to probably know the same thing if they've never heard of you or they don't know who you are or what your cause is and what caused you to end up in jail or in prison. Or in holding, or as a domestic terrorist. I mean, what exactly is going on with you?
Right. Well, I could say that my origins of dealing with the corrupt empire of lies stem from being a political activist. You know, I was born a child of the 60s. I had hippie parents. I was born into activism. And as I got older, I participated in the political system and volunteered for a variety of political campaigns. I volunteered as early back as the first Clinton presidency. My parents were Democrats, so that's just, you know, the vein that goes there. That parlayed into during the Bush-Gore campaign, I ran 7 wards for the Central Corridor of Columbus. The Clintonville area, and I turned 7 Republic. I personally, in running those wards, along with my wife at the time, turned those 7 typically and historically Republican wards Democrat, running on a progressive Democratic platform. We had formed what we called the Progressives, the Clintonville Progressives, and so we played a centrist. Platform, and I was ran the 7 wards for the Kerry campaign, and I only ran the 7 wards for the Kerry campaign and volunteered to do this because he had promised that if there was any election fraud, that he would never cede if there was any election fraud. Well, everyone knows there was massive election fraud during that time. We had we knew that we won the wards before the polls were even at 2 o'clock that day. We'd done such a great job of pre-polling. We knew what everyone was going to vote. And yet there was massive corruption and voter fraud in the state of Ohio. I mean, they had counties in the state of Ohio where more people voted than were registered. It was a horrible, horrible. And this was election fraud on behalf of Bush. Okay. So there was massive election fraud in the Bush-Kerry campaign benefiting a Republican Bush. And yet, within, I think, 20 hours of the polls closing, Kerry ceded. I think he ceded that evening. And that disenfranchised a whole lot of people that I knew because the reason why they worked so hard is because they knew that there was voter corruption and voter fraud going on. And then the city, the state of Ohio, particularly the city of Columbus, they ran this big thing where 2 weeks they took depositions about everything that happened in Ohio. And there was a panel of 7 attorneys who took all this information and evidence. You know what they did with it? Nothing. They actually collected it and buried it. And so that it proved to me that there was inherent voter corruption, voter fraud, and election fraud going on in the state of Ohio that couldn't be corrected. And at that time, we thought it was on behalf of Republicans. So I started doing grassroots organizations. I did a lot of stuff, student organizations, grassroots organizations, but I particularly turned into an Occupy first happened. I actually founded and helped fund the Occupy movement in the city of Columbus. Paid for the tent, everything. If you drove by the Occupy movement at that time, everything you saw out there was funded by me. And I did that to help the students. And when I did that, I found out that we had good cops and bad cops playing games. And we also had this nifty little thing called the Red Dragon, which I called them the Red Dragon Unit now, but the Red Unit that had come about after 9/11 under Bush, he had basically infiltrated and implanted CIA and FBI operatives into every municipal police department. So every municipality has this unit, which I was notified was called the Red Unit by a Roger Dickerson, I think it's his name, who plays a part in my case here. But Roger Dickerson, when I first met him, was in Occupy, and he was this liaison officer for this FBI, CIA coordinating group who were basically conspiring with municipalities to control the American people political arena, you know, with these backdoor agenda cooperative, you know, organizations called the Red Unit. So basically the FBI and the CIA have been embedded in municipalities and conspiring with and manipulating the local politics of municipalities since Bush and since the Patriot Act. Most people do not know that. And they have police officers that they coordinate with. They actually coordinate and basically conspire with the city police departments, and I'm sure the sheriffs and the prosecuting attorneys and everybody else. So found out that there was some conspiracy going on in the city. Found out that the attorneys were basically, what I had found out is that we were doing grassroots organizations, and I was creating these grassroots organizations, and we were facilitating them, getting them organized, having leaders and organized leaderships, and then suddenly the attorneys would come in, and the organization would be co-opted and collapse. So I learned firsthand, and this happened with Occupy, that the attorneys were coming into these organizations, and as soon as the attorneys walked in, and Occupy was supposed to be against, you know, the state, and yet these attorneys walk in and started filing permits against the will of the students for the occupation, thereby bringing them under the jurisdiction of the city. So these attorneys did this without their consent and co-opted the movement, and it fell apart. So now we're looking at attorneys and cops conspiring. I start realizing that attorneys and cops are conspiring against these grassroots organizations and the disenfranchised, the homeless. Found out a lot about how the homeless were being extorted by the city, and the quote churches and the organizations where they had their addresses placed, because in order to get your benefits you have to put an address, and these homeless people were putting addresses of churches and stuff, and these churches would feed them a bologna sandwich a day and then kick them out and steal all their benefits. And these are stories we were hearing from the homeless while we were in the tent at Occupy, because that's what Occupy was for. Why would we need an occupation to feed the homeless whenever they're supposed to be helped by all these organizations that were receiving their benefits and their federal funding, their disability, yet they were not providing them? They were just stealing their money, folks. They were just stealing the money of the homeless, and no one was doing anything about it. So learned that what was happening when in dealing with the homeless is that the city, when it needed money, were bond running the homeless. They would literally go into the homeless camps, which there shouldn't need to be homeless camps because they're supposed to have beds in these churches where their addresses are, right? And they would raid these homeless camps and pull all the homeless people off the street, put them in jail, and bond run them, charge them with these minor misdemeanors and this stuff, and they'd be in jail for 2 or 3 days at a time. And so we found out that they were RICOing the courts with the homeless. So there's this long litany of these things that I was learning as I was politically active and trying to assist the disenfranchised and do grassroots organizations to help the people that wanted to affect change in this country from the established two-party system, and found that there was a corruption within the system to perpetuate it and to promote it, and that was within the police department, the city of in this particular state, the city of Columbus Police Department, the prosecuting attorney's office, bond running the homeless, the attorney, the bar union of the state, and the judiciary of the states, but particularly the municipal courts. So once I learned that, I stopped doing grassroots organizations because there's no point in it. There's no point in organizing grassroots organizations. They are eventually co-opted and they dissolve. And if ever there's a, quote, grassroots organization that rises to some type of national level, let's say Ross Perot's party, his party got co-opted in Florida and just disappeared. It doesn't matter. But when it gets to a national organization, if it benefits the establishment, it will be allowed to flourish, such as BLM. It will be allowed to tear down buildings and burn buildings and riot and do things that benefit the establishment if it suits it. If it doesn't suit the establishment, it will be co-opted and it will disappear and it will be attacked such as the Patriot Movement, where they are now targeting people who are constitutionalists and who are trying to fight for the constitutional republic that we actually have as a foundation of our government, and are now being called domestic terrorists and placed indefinitely in detention, coming into their house with warrants to try to kill them, things like this. So in this country, there is an established practice of the prevailing government to facilitate Bolshevism. Okay, if you have an organization that suits their Bolshevism and their fascist ideology, they will let you flourish, such as BLM. If you are anti the establishment and you are for the constitutional republic and the put down of a fascist, you know, totalitarian hidden despotism state, then they attack you and come at you and try to kill you and assassinate you, destroy you financially, attack you, attack your person, your character, and impugn you, tag you a domestic terrorist. That is the state of your government. So once I realized that the courts were corrupted, that's when I became a target for the city itself, the establishment itself. It started whenever I was helping a friend of mine who had been was bond running on a regular basis. And what they would do is they would take these homeless people and they would parlay them into disability court and make them wards of the state. And he was started being made a ward of the state on a regular basis for bonds. And being charged, you know, with ridiculous stuff like jaywalking. I mean, just ridiculous stuff. This man was stopped in every way he possibly could, in every way he could for traveling. He was stopped on a bicycle and ticketed. He was stopped for jaywalking. He was stopped while he was in a wheelchair in the street because there were not handicapped ramps, and 9 cop cars surrounded him and then placed him on the sidewalk that he couldn't get off of. I mean, this man was harassed, and this is what they do to the homeless folks. They harass the homeless. They harass the disenfranchised for money and bonds and run them through their bond-running court system. So he was tired of this, and he wanted my assistance in as an advocate. And that was the first time I got arrested, is advocating for this young man who did not want to be put in disability court and be treated as a ward of the state. And I was arrested for insisting that the court establish jurisdiction. He wanted to demur. In the state of Ohio, the demur is a legislative right established by, and you can challenge the jurisdiction of the court, you can challenge the indictment, you can challenge the intent of the indictment, that the established intent of the indictment and or the indictment itself does not constitute a crime in the state by statutes. But more importantly, he wanted to challenge the jurisdiction over the court to put him, to make him disabled and make him a ward of the state every time they brought him in. And he was being harassed. We proved that they were basically following the guy. I told him to keep a journal, and he could be in any part of the county on his bike, and they would find him. The cops would just roll up on him. So we figured that they were basically tracking him through his phone. And they do this to people, folks. They do this to people on a regular basis, the disenfranchised, the people that, you know, I'm around a lot here in jail. That you all forget about and you all think are just the dregs of the earth, and they're not. They're harassed, they're tortured, they're preyed upon by the system, and people just forget about them. They just think they out of sight, out of mind. I mean, it's the leper colony that Christ dealt with, and this is supposed to be a Christian nation, and you've got a whole big leper colony called your prison industrial complex and the jails of this country, and you all don't care about them. So, you know, you're failing as a Christian nation. If this is a Christian nation, I'd like to see it. But in any case, so as I was standing in court to assist this young man to exercise his right to demur, I was told to stay silent. I was asked to him to advocate, and I refused to do that. And so I was charged without a court contempt while standing in court because she had no jurisdiction over me. The judge, Judge Peoples, had no jurisdiction over me, and she knew that. So she couldn't charge me with in-court contempt because I'd not been called to her court. So I was charged with out-of-court contempt while I was standing in court for trying to assist a disabled person from being manipulated and extorted by the City of Columbus Municipal Court and being made a ward of the state on a regular basis. So that was my first arrest, in standing up for someone who was disabled or being treated unfairly as a disabled person. I demurred. I presented a copy of my state of Missouri birth certificate, and the case was discharged, and my bond was never returned. So that right there was my first indication and proof of the power of the birth certificate, which I had been learning about. Because after I had learned about the courts being corrupted, I was drawn into a group of people who were quite educated about the the law, the concurrence of, we have a bifurcated system. We have an admiralty system overlaid, or constitutional republic, which is unconstitutional. So I started learning about the four jurisdictions of law and how our government has been bifurcated since basically 1812, and we've been under trusteeship and all these things that pertain to law. And I learned that the courts, what we think are courts, are not courts. They're merely private private bar union hearings, tribunals that operate as banks and trade people, just like they did as slaves on the docket, and issue bonds on us and transact us and kidnap us and traffic us for money. That's what I learned over the course of the years. And the continued targeting basically got me in a situation where I was stopped. I was at, to the point where I was not licensing my carriage, which was basically a toolbox for my business. It was basically which you could do this. It was licensed, but I had not licensed it at that time under trusteeship. But you can register your car.
You have 1 minute remaining.
I can call back. There's no one vying for the phone here. I was. You can register your car as a farm vehicle. So I was basically operating my corporate, my company van as a farm vehicle without a licensure, and I got stopped, beat up at the side of the road, $15,000 in toolbox seized and arrested and beat up. And but I was targeted. I was basically found out that my picture was sitting at the right outside, right as you went out the door of the police station in their crew room. My picture was there with the guy I had tried to help. And we were to be targeted, found that out. So I was made a target for trying to help the disenfranchised by the City of Columbus Police Department. And then so that was my second arrest, and I was beat up by the City of Columbus Police Department at the side of the road, property seized unlawfully. And then that was on St. Patrick's Day, 2015, I believe. I was very upset about that since I was going to miss St. Patrick's Day. And then I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang up.
Thank you for using GTL.
Well, that was Rexton Lotus Justice. Hopefully she'll be calling in here in 1 second after we hang up. I may have to restart the podcast here, but you could check out this podcast at social1776.com. Again, that's social1776.com. And we're just waiting for Rexton to call back in.
Hello, this is a prepaid call from
inmate at the Franklin County Corrections 2.
To accept this call, press 0. To refuse this call, hang up or press 1. To prevent calls, your current balance is $21.58. This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using GTL.
Hey there.
Hey, welcome back.
Yeah. Are we still recording?
Yep, we still are recording, but I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
So as people are following this case, you know, in the beginning, we see that, you got arrested for face mask mandates that were happening when you were at the hospital with your mom.
Right.
And you know, so that was like at the very beginning of all of this corruption
right.
happening. Now, the follow-up question, which a lot of people really want to know about is, according to, you know, some of the podcasts that we've done in the past, you spoke about child trafficking that was happening at military bases in Ohio. So the question is, what are the details that led up to that? And was that possibly part of the reason that you were targeted?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the reasons. Let's put it this way. Because I understand the law and am a student of actual law and history of law, which is law is a very long history. You have to – law has been going on for thousands of years, folks. Christ established law. He was the first to trust. when he railed against Rome. And so, I mean, these are all things that I've done in my YouTube channel, which had, you know, almost over 70 videos. I taught people these things. So the fact that I would educate people on the law and I'm learned in the law is a reason why every time that I, any time I come across the prevailing state, they are just a big pile of doo-doo when it comes to unlawful and constitutional activity. And being learned in the law, I can point to it and go, you can't do that. There's very little that the government does that they are allowed by law to do. And that's what is unfortunate about people who are unlearned in law. They don't understand that your prevailing states of men is an empire of criminality and RICO. And it is unconstitutional and unlawful treasury. It is an unconstitutional and unlawful judiciary. And the government itself is unlawful because titles and nobility holders are in positions of power, trust, and authority, which the 13th Amendment, the first 13th Amendment, Titles and Nobility Amendment, does not afford. And that is, I am the person in the history of this country that proved on the record and in case law and in court cases that the Titles of Nobility Amendment was passed lawfully in circa around 1809. That is in my son's case. That was one of the cases, as I was going to continue to talk about, is when I got arrested on St. Patrick's Day in 2015, I believe. Maybe it was 2014. I think it was maybe 2014. It was one of those years. I've been doing this for so long. You could look at the case. I bonded out. I went to the hearing on Monday, and I had researched at that time that the city of Columbus was basically a body politic corporation founded by 10 white guys. And the statutes of Ohio at the time of its incorporation allowed any 10 men, presumably white, landholders, who had contiguous land, which means just land touching, to form a corporation, and then to seize any land within the contiguous area against the will of the people who owned it. So the city of Columbus was created by 10 men who had contiguous land that created like a semicircle, and they seized everything in like this big circle. So it was a forced corporate overlay under which Clintonville, which was a commonwealth, was seized against its will. So there's actually a writer for the Commonwealth of Clintonville. Clintonville is a commonwealth by its history. There is a rider in the seizing of the Commonwealth of Clintonville into the corporate charter of, quote, the City of Columbus, which is owned, a body politic corporation owned by the prevailing heirs of 10 white men. I have the charter. You can go down to the city and get it. It's a body politic corporation owned by 10 people. Okay, and their heirs. Okay, and so Clintonville had a rider, and that it could cede out of the corporate charter anytime it wanted, with a simple vote. Okay, so this is the power of Clintonville and the city of Columbus that they don't know about. But there is a rider in the charter of its forced incorporation. So this type of incorporation was happening all over Ohio, and I'm assuming probably all over the country at the time. I knew that the city of Columbus was a forced overlay in a corporation, body politic. It was not what we would consider a government. It's a corporation, folks. So when I went to court on following that Monday, I had already seized my name and laid claim to the frauds of the birth certificate. I was operating under Rexton Lotus Justice. My driver's license was in the all capital name, but signed Rexton Lotus Justice. I had the city charter, I had all my instruments, and I presented as the executor of the instrumentality and said, hey, you know, the plaintiff is a thing. I want to subpoena the thing. And the prosecuting attorney for the municipality didn't even know that the city of Columbus was a corporation. I said, well, here's the charter, and, you know, I throw it into the case. And in that hearing, I'm arrested in court by the same judge, Andrea Peoples, for failure to appear while I'm standing in front of her, because I refuse to admit that I am the all capital thing, right? And so I'm arrested in that case and beaten up by two attorneys who jumped me and a police officer, but he was more or less trying to effect a fraudulent arrest. So I was arrested in court for failure to appear, and had three ribs broken. They were collapsed. I was jumped on. I was beaten up, and they put me in jail, and I was charged with felonious assault on an officer. Not with the resisting arrest, but I was charged with the felony assault on an officer who was effecting an unlawful arrest. So that's for my failure to appear while I'm standing in court. So I fight that case. I'm my own counsel. I fight to be my own counsel. It was a kangaroo trial. I don't know how many pages the trial was. I don't know how many sidebars there were. But I do recall that the judge said at one time in a sidebar, "Miss Justice, you cannot impugn the systems of government and the judiciary." I said, "Yes, I can." You know, so I was challenging the jurisdiction of the court. I demurred. The whole case was under demur. Before the jury was sent to deliberation, the judge removed the mandate of intent in his instructions, which is a total crime. It's not a crime if you can't prove intent, folks. In order for there to be a crime, a societal or a state crime, you have to prove intent. It is incumbent upon the prosecution to prove intent for there to be a crime. Otherwise, it's self-defense, right? So the judge literally removed from the instructions to the jury the mandate of intent for the state to prove intent, because they couldn't. And so I was found guilty in that case. I was offered the ability to do parole, but at the time they were shooting people. Okay, they had shot a young man during my trial, who he had declared. I don't know if he was smart, if he declared himself a sovereign citizen, but he was tagged a sovereign citizen. He literally, two police officers went into his house and shot him without a warrant. There was an article in what was called the other paper at the time about did the Columbus police officers assassinate this man. So I was not going to go on parole and have it so that they could walk into my house and shoot me and no investigation being done, because I knew that there was such a thing called parole evidence and parole. And parole under the Lieber Code is when you've promised to behave, that you've been found to be a belligerent against the occupation and they've released you. And under parole, you promise to not be belligerent against the occupation anymore. Well, if you're found to be belligerent against the occupation under the Lieber Code after you've been paroled, and these are all things you can research, folks. Just go read the Lieber Code. If you are found to be belligerent to the occupation after you've been paroled by the prevailing, you know, governance, because we're still in the Civil War. People don't understand this. We're still in the Civil War. They can shoot you dead on sight, and there's no trial. So when people wonder why young black men, just women, any man who's under parole is murdered, the famous case being the young man on the subway platform that was choked to death, or the young man that purportedly was killed in Minnesota, you know, they can kill you while you're on parole if you are found to be belligerent against the occupation again, and there's no mandate for a trial or even an investigation. So they have an open, under the Lieber Code, they have an open license to murder you if you're on parole and deemed to be in belligerence to the occupation that you've been paroled by. So I was no way in hell going to be on parole because I knew they'd kill me. So I refused PSIs, you know, pre-sentencing investigations, which are where they garner parole evidence. They wanted me to go and do things with no witnesses and give testimony ex parte with a parole officer who would then, by law of equity, seize me as a ward, all these things. These are all law things that people don't understand are happening by the manner and the structure of the judiciary, where they actually seize you as a ward and seize you as property and then convey you. So I knew not to make all those mistakes and ended up with a one-year prison sentence. That's where I met my wife. While I was in prison is when I started finding about the human and child trafficking and the fact that women are targeted disproportionately with cases. I mean, if you sit in jail and talk to women, there's women that are in here because they defended themselves against boyfriends that were beating them, and they're in here for domestic violence, and the man was never arrested. Of course, she has three children that they want to seize through probate. So women, just as the Bible says, they target women and children. The red dragon targets the woman and the child that they can convey as property in their misogynistic, you know, fascist Babylonian slave trade system. And found out that in prison, women were basically being RICO'd and trafficked through prison. Babies were being sold. Found out that in the prison systems of women, that women are segregated off when they're pregnant, that there are adoption agencies that don't even have to be registered with the state, that are completely regulated by the actual head of the prison, I can't think of the name, what they're called now, but the head, the person who runs the prison is the only person who regulates what, quote, organizations come in to adopt these children. And women were being paid $3,000 on their books to sell their babies. But here's the thing, folks. These women weren't really being given an option. These babies were being taken. They were in prison. They trafficked them to the hospitals to have the babies. They are forcibly taken from the women. They are not necessarily conveyed to family. These adoption agencies seize these babies. These are unregulated agencies, and the women are paid $3,000 on the books when they do it willfully. Okay, folks, they're paid. When they don't do it willfully, they get nothing. And even if family members have the right to adopt and have applied for adoption, these babies are seized. And the question I had at the time was, do they even produce birth certificates for these children? And we don't know if they do. So the prisons are a huge source where they are trafficking children away from pregnant prisoners. And these women are being forcibly having their babies taken from them by courts. And that is one reason why they target women in the prison industrial complex, because they can seize the children. So they love pregnant women. They like to hold on to, they like to take pregnant women. They like to attack women that have children in the prison industrial complex. My wife was one of those. She had a child. She had been arrested at the side of as a passenger in a car. Her son was in the car. She was not the driver of the car. The car was not hers. There was drug paraphernalia, manufacturing paraphernalia in the car. The child was seized at the side of the road, never to be seen again. No warrant for arrest, nothing. We proved that they didn't even have a warrant for his arrest for 7 days. She was told that the child would be given back to her if she pled guilty to her and her family. So she pled guilty. The child was never seen again by the family. There were like 15 family members that were wanting this kid. There was one family member that the child was actually in the legal custody of at the time, that had legal custody, was not even party to the case. She had an aunt that was pre-qualified in the county already to receive children under CPS. This aunt was not considered for that, even though she was already in consideration for another teenager that was from another side of the family. So we found out that basically Highland County, Ohio, traffics children, steals them at the side of the road. When I got out of prison, I was enjoined in her case. They mentioned my name in her she had a pre-release hearing. She was supposed to get out within a year so she could get her son back. The judge in that case, Rocky Koss, mentioned my name and said that he wasn't going to release her because she spoke to me in prison. So my wife was targeted for being affiliated with me in prison because I was already on the radar as a nation of one and one who knew the law and was challenging the establishment. So he enjoined me to her case, which gave me the privilege in law. Since he brought me into the case, he invoked my name in the case, he brought me into it, I was able to challenge to be party to not only her criminal case, where I was made a real party of interest in why she was denied, the pre-release and allowed to get out of prison and go to drug treatment program. I was enjoined in that, and also enjoined in her son's custody case because he named me. Because the reason why her son was conveyed after that is because and adopted out is because she was denied pre-release. So I became a real party of interest in the whole case with her and her son. And in that spent, after I got out, that was the first thing. I was basically enjoined. I think I'd been out of prison for 9 days to go to this hearing, and my name was brought into it, and I was invoked. So I'm set to task to appeal the pending adoption, and the unlawful seizure of the child, the illegal plea agreement where there was a quid pro quo for a child. All these unlawful activities that the state had affected. I spent 3 years, two years while she was still in prison fighting this and learned all this stuff, and then found out that all these things, I didn't start knowing about the child trafficking. I worked my way into understanding child trafficking and understanding that CPS is basically just a child trafficking system. Probate courts, which is how they came to me this time.
Can I interrupt you? Because we're limited to this. The question is, where does this military base come into play in your discovery of this whole...
Well, what I found out about military bases is that there are CPS offices on military bases overseas, that they are purportedly embedded, that there is a system of seizing children overseas when they're found roaming about. And that actually goes back to Vietnam. You can go, I don't know if you can anymore, but you used to be able to go find pictures, okay, where there was an entire commercial plane of Vietnamese orphans, okay, on a commercial plane provided by the United States, where they shipped these Vietnamese orphans that the military had helped create, to other countries. So that was told to me by some investigators who said there are CPS agencies on military bases, that the United States just isn't seizing children and isn't just allowing, as they are, they're allowing the criminal activity of our government to seize children. And right now we see, you know, the military has a duty to control our borders as well, folks. If the executor violates the law, the military has a duty to do that. So they're allowing children to be trafficked to and from across our borders, have been for years, but they also facilitate the activities of children being seized in foreign countries. That's what the Roman Empire did. They'd go and, I mean, the military is operating like the old Roman Empire. They are the old Roman Empire. The militaries of the world create orphans, and then they seize them, folks. That's what they do. That's what the Roman Empire did. They go and create orphans and then seize them and bring them into the fold and raise the boys in the Roman guard and parlay off the girls. So this isn't activity that is not historically already established over thousands of years. They're doing the same thing now. So I'm sure that's a question from a military personnel one. Surely we don't do that. Yeah, they do that.
Now, here's a question for you. Are there any places that you would point people to if they wanted to look into this and do more research? Are there any particular links that you would suggest for people, or key term words people would look up?
Well, the unfortunate part is that we are in a period of heavy censorship. We've always been censored. I mean,
right.
The internet is heavily censored. Things that you could get 6 months ago, you can't find anymore. I would say go. Well, I'm hoping to get some of my videos back up, but there are people that are still out there exposing this child trafficking. There's a lot of victims everywhere. In fact, we just started a Lotus Justice Project forum page on Facebook that I can share with you, where I wanted it started so that people could speak about the facts of cases. What you have to understand, folks, is that there are tens of thousands of people.
You have 1 minute remaining.
They're limited unless you are, because there's no one. That's why we chose this time. There's no one challenging their needing the phone right now, so I can't call back. But there's hundreds of thousands of mothers and fathers who've had their children stolen by the state, probated as property. So I would tell you, go find the probate. Show me anywhere in the statutes of Ohio or any state where the probate courts have the right to traffic children as property in state statutes. They don't. They don't have the right to seize people in general. They can't even issue search warrants, criminal search warrants. The probate courts in the state of Ohio can't issue search warrants. They can't issue warrants of arrest. The only time they can issue warrants of arrest is when property is being damaged. Okay, so that tells you something right there. So there's this vacancy of law where the statutes say one thing, the funding says another thing, federal law says another thing, and they're operating in the murkiness of not having any specific limitations, where no one has challenged the constitutionality of what they're doing. There are hundreds of thousands of people who have lost their children, who have disappeared through the court systems of this country unlawfully.
Thank you for using GTL.
Well, there you go. We're going to be working here on part three. This conversation with Rex and Lotus Justice. We'll just wait for her to call back in. So hold on, friends.